If you're purchasing a new home or refinancing your existing home, then you need to call Team Hochberg, your trusted local lender, 855-563-2843, or visit 56david.com. Atlantic Coast Mortgage, Equal Housing Lender, NMLS 643-114.
Mark Hammergren is with us, an astronomer at the Adler Planetarium. And we now know, Mark, that it was those SpaceX satellites, right?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, so about 60 of them launch at a time, and then they'll spread out along their orbit and form that kind of, well, string of pearls, if you're being generous.
Yeah, right. Generous. Well, I mean, it was really remarkable to see for a lot of people. I didn't see it, but what's the purpose of the satellites being that close together? Do they eventually spread out around the globe, or are they always going to be in a straight line like that?
No, they do spread out over time. The idea is to put enough of these satellites into orbit, and SpaceX has been launching 60 of them at a time every couple months, that they really blanket the globe with satellite coverage for internet.
So how is that different than the satellites that are already out there? I mean, I've got cell phone service, and I can Skype with somebody on the other side of the planet. What are they providing that I don't already have access to?
Well, right now, the internet access and communications access that goes up through satellites is relatively limited, and most of that is in what's called geosynchronous orbit. It's a long way up there, about 22, 23,000 miles. These satellites are going to be in low Earth orbit, much, much closer. They'll cover more of the Earth's surface, and they'll also provide what's called the low latency. So gamers know about this stuff. It's the lag you get between when you try to do something and when something happens. And that's limited by the speed of light, or the speed of radio in this case. And the closer the things are, the satellites are, the shorter that latency is.
I see. So who will be the customers for these services? Gamers maybe will appreciate this, but talk to me a little bit more about the need. I mean, I text, I look at videos, I use my cell phone. I'm fairly satisfied with the service I'm getting. Who's driving this?
You know, that's a really good question. Now, SpaceX, or rather Starlink, it's an affiliate company. Their model is supposedly that they're going to offer service to parts of the globe that don't currently have affordable internet.
Yeah.
Where you can't string towers and fiber and that kind of stuff, where people don't have access or you know, cheap access. That said, their initial market is going to be North America and I think mostly more North America, yeah.
Well, I have friends in Upper Minnesota, or friends in Minnesota who will go to Upper Minnesota, the Canadian border there, at the, the BWCA? And when you're out, when you're in the woods there, there's no internet service. If you're in parts of some deserts or mountains, there's no internet service there. My brother's in-laws have a cabin in the mountains in Colorado. Very bad internet service there. So this they would all be customers for this service, right?
They would be, yeah, and I think that's why they're choosing a more affluent market,
right.
Frankly,
right.
Than, you know, talking about the more unreached parts of the globe. You still do need a network receiving station, so this is not like you'll be able to pull out your cell phone and get these satellites. You'll still need a dedicated receiver, so this will be more like house service.
Interesting. And one of the things that some people don't like is that in these pristine areas where you don't get cell service, if you're putting up a series of cell phone towers, then it mars the environment and it looks bad and people don't like that. This would get around the need for all of those towers, though, right?
Well, in part, sure. You can always have wired service or fiber running underground or that kind of thing. Cell towers, that's a different thing. That's actually a different market than Starlink will provide. Problem with Starlink is you're going to have these satellites up in orbit in the night sky, and everyone around the world can view these things.
Really? I mean, so when we see these string of pearls zipping through the sky at night, would that be a recent launch, and they've just gone up a whole bunch of them, and now they, or have a bunch of them have been released from one rocket, and now they're all very close together, but eventually they'll dissipate, they'll spread out, right?
Yeah, that's right. So the latest launch was in late April. The ones that people have been seeing have been from that or from March. as they go along, they spread out, but they also go into higher orbits where they're fainter and fainter to see. And when they're in their station-keeping orbits, where they provide service, they won't be visible very well to the naked eye at all. But ground-based telescopes like astronomers use will definitely be affected by that.
Do we care? I mean, there's no environmental concern. I sometimes worry about all of the space junk out there. Someday a piece of something's going to slam into one of our spaceships or, you know, space stations, and we're going to be sorry the day that happens.
That's absolutely a concern. Right now, there are tens of thousands of pieces of debris, larger than maybe about a softball across, a baseball across, that could completely destroy another satellite, a working satellite. But that's relatively small stuff. SpaceX is launching these Starlink satellites. They hope to have like 1,500, 1,600 of them in the next year or two, and eventually 12,000, maybe even 40,000 plus of these things in near-Earth orbit. Yeah.
Well, they would all know where each other is, though, right?
They will, but that's still a really large number. And each of the satellites is supposed to be able to do station keeping so they can maneuver around possible impacts. But there was a case recently where a Starlink satellite came within about a 1/1,000th chance of hitting another satellite. And that was about 10 times higher than the European Space Agency really recommends for taking evasive action.
It's funny because that sounds like a lot, but then Earth's pretty big, and up higher, it's even a vaster area. So I wonder, for instance, how many miles between satellites or pieces of space junk out there? I would assume it's thousands and thousands and thousands of miles, right?
Well, and low Earth orbit is particularly concentrated. It's a really valuable place to put satellites. It's the easiest place to put them.
Yeah.
And it's where Starlink is going to put these things. So we're talking between pieces of space debris, probably in most cases hundreds to thousands of miles across. Yeah. But they are constantly moving at many miles per second. And even over the past couple decades, a few satellites have accidentally run into each other and created huge clouds of debris. So that is a big concern for us.
Boy, think about that. Vroom, 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 vroom. Just all of these things spinning around. Vroom. You don't even think about them or see about them. I'm thinking about how we didn't pay any attention when we were putting carbon into our atmosphere. And we said, well, you know, it's no big deal. My car, your car. And over the years, eventually, we all woke up to, oh, crap, I wish we could go back and have fixed this then, and we wouldn't be in the situation we're in now. I wonder if we're kind of in the same place right now with space, you know, that we were with our atmosphere 50, 100 years ago.
Oh, yeah, I think that's a really great analogy. It goes with every kind of thing, too. People dumping stuff in the ocean. Ah, yeah. Oh, they're so big, we'll never notice. Putting things in dumps on the land. Oh, the land is so huge, we'll never notice. And now it's space. We'll put it up there. We don't have to worry about it. But it turns out we really do.
I didn't anticipate you and I would be talking about this that way, Mark. Am I borrowing trouble here, or is this a serious conversation between the likes of you?
It's a very serious conversation, yeah. And granted, space engineers, satellite scientists, have been worrying about this for a long time. And they've been putting, well, rules. They're not laws. They're just kind of agreements between countries in place for avoiding this kind of smashing into each other.
You know, the one
voluntary.
Point well taken. The thing that bothers me, Mark, I don't know if you and I've talked about this before, but I'm telling you what, I'm sorry to see that humanity never learns its lessons, and we may do to upper space what we've done to lower space, but the one that scares me is an asteroid coming to Earth, and we don't still have a giant laser. We don't have Ben Affleck and Bruce Willis at the ready. Ooh, if you guys, there you go again. But if one of those things were coming at us, we're toast. We're the dinosaurs, right?
Well, see, this is something that I actually study. Yeah, so I have been working on this for my whole career, looking for asteroids, trying to figure out what they're made of, where they're coming from, do they pose a threat? And the short answer is they don't pose a huge threat right now, as far as we know. But the key there is as far as we know. And we won't know unless we keep looking for these things. Now, gratefully, oh boy, if we see one coming, chances are we'll have a couple decades of warning if it's a really big one. And then, hopefully, humanity can mount some kind of response. I have to say, though, I'm not very enthused about that probability.
Why? Because you see so little international cooperation on, a disease these days?
Yeah, that might be a thing like that. Oh, it's somebody else's problem? And that is a huge concern, too, because if we see an asteroid coming and it's going to hit the Earth, we'll know where it's going to hit. And we might say, it's going to hit Germany. Don't worry about it. They can deal with it. But it could have a global impact. And that's what we really do have to worry about.
Yeah. My number is 312-981-7200. Mark Hammergren's on a phone line, astronomer at Adler Planetarium on the Starlink satellites from SpaceX. By the way, Mark, you guys are not in operation. Are people able to look at your stuff or use your services online somehow right now?
Yeah, so we're very much in operation, just digitally, really. So we're not open physically, but we have stuff online. Visit adlerplanetarium.org. You'll see what we have to offer. And we have stuff on Google Arts and Culture. So many programs going on, yeah.
I want to take a couple calls for you. Before I do, though, just back to the asteroid that may wipe out humanity. Do you favor the laser blasting it? Do you like mounting a rocket ship to steer it away? Or do you just want to put a nuclear weapon on it and blow it up?
So the simplest and most straightforward is kind of the last one, not necessarily a nuclear weapon, but what we call a kinetic impactor, something to just blast into it and knock it off course. And that will work best if we have a lot of lead time. Actually, every solution works if we have that decades of lead time on it.
Is it possible that all of the really big ones have already fallen into some planet or sun's orbit, and so there aren't many rogue chunks of something coming at us, right? Because that's what it would require. Everything else has sort of been accounted for over the zillions of years of the universe, right?
Well, not so much about the zillions of years of the universe, but the decades of study by astronomers here on Earth. And that's one of the greatest unsung stories of NASA, really, is looking at the potentially hazardous asteroids. And something like 97%, maybe more than that, of the globally threatening asteroids have been found, and not a single one is on a collision course for at least the next 100 years. So,
Well, that last part makes me laugh. I mean, okay, but that sucks for our grandkids, at least 100 years. I mean, okay, what about people in 200 years? Are they going to get hit by one of these things?
Well, that's why we have to keep tracking this. When I say, you know, for 100 years, it doesn't mean that one is coming in 101 years. It's just that the orbits are kind of uncertain. And the further you go in the future, the more uncertain its position is going to be in 100 years. It could completely miss the Earth, or maybe it's going to hit. And now, we don't know of any cases specifically like that, but 100 years is kind of the timetable for that kind of uncertainty. So that's why I give that, 100-year statement.
Got it. Pam had a question for you. You're on WGN. Pam, how can we help you?
Hi, yes. My mother claims that because our weather has been really bad the last couple of years, it's really changed, gotten more volatile and stuff over the last few years, she thinks that it's all the satellites and stuff up in, up there, like interfering with airflow, all that stuff. Is that possible? Can that happen or no?
The short answer is that's not going to be the thing that's causing that kind of climate change. So starlight, other objects in the sky, planets, they've been going around in their orbits, been shining down on us for, and essentially the same ways, for many, many thousands, millions of years. And the sun has been going through its activity cycles every 11 years or so, and really has not mounted any of those kind of long-term climate changes. What we're seeing is different and is caused, most scientists believe, by human activity, by pumping stuff in the atmosphere. Yeah. I myself have seen evidence for that carbon dioxide, because when I look up at asteroids, look up at stars, I have to look through the atmosphere, and I see that increased amount of carbon dioxide.
Thanks for the call and the question, Pam. And Mark, as always, thanks for your time and expertise. Let's you and I visit more often. You're always a great conversation. We appreciate it.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Thanks so much.
He is the astronomer, or one of them, at Adler Planetarium, Mark Hammergren.